Welcome to The Scales of Truth with Tyson Hartley.
Another episode finally drops. I know you've been waiting. Hopefully you've been listening over on Chemology 411. This is a simulcast, one that we thought was important enough. We'd like to increase the audience for this great guest and for the information that is communicated. So I'm going to go ahead and plug that in right here.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another excursion on Chemology 411. Tonight, we have a great special guest with us, and I'm not just including Tyson. Tyson is sitting right next to me. How's your day, Tyson?
Hey, I'm always a special guest, and you can take that
very
however
special.
You want.
He but, is always special, yes.
And after whatever we're on, 60 episodes or longer, I'm always the given special guest.
You
know, like the guests that never left the house. You know, one of those.
Mind.
But yes, above and beyond, I'm very excited.
Yes.
I've got to say, I mean, we haven't, I know you've done a lot of your other things during your podcast where you bring in superstar segment. Michael is certainly worthy of a superstar segment in one regard. It's just
right.
That it was my idea and within a particular subject matter. So who we have today is someone that I have just been excited to kind of have a crush on his intellect.
Yes.
Is that okay? Not only that, but just kind of the willpower to go ahead and dig and do the right thing.
You're welcome. I introduced you to him through Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Well, regardless, I got to say that I'm just very impressed with what this person has done with the subject matter of the year. And I want to introduce to you, we first became aware of, first let's say, hello, Michael Austin. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. Nice to finally meet you.
We will talk forever.
So when we first became aware of you, it was probably a few months ago when I started following some work on Kansas. It's Kansas.
No, Open Up Kansas. But it was actually
Kansas.
My friend Kim was starting her stuff. And that's how I found Michael, because she was the first one that started talking with him.
So we saw a lot of his work online in those types of groups regarding reaction and kind of policy and trying to interpret the COVID situation. So we became first aware of you probably March, April, something like that, maybe May, Michael. And here and there, I've chatted with you there. And I just thought you guys have had some outstanding breaking stories and analysis. I want to tell you, the audience, that here and there, I haven't done a lot of my stuff over on the Scales of Truth, but on a smaller scale, on Chemology 411, when I mentioned the 42 cycles that Kansas Laboratories allows and the PCR testing and versus the 40 cycles that the FDA says can be a true positive versus the 36 cycle situation where we talked about French studies and that being the last of viable culture,
right,
if you will. That information coincided with what Michael has found.
And the graph.
Yes, the graph.
That graph.
We're going to go into that for
all
you.
All that stuff.
So, Michael, first question for you. Now, I know that I don't really care about people's background in some way. When they say some really good stuff, they get my attention. You know, just period. That's what gets my attention. But that said, I am curious about, was that your first personal delving in this COVID 2020 into this kind of what I'll call supplementing the news media, you know, to make the public more aware of these important issues? And if it wasn't, when did you start doing that type of thing where you're helping inform people on these important topics?
You know, my background is in economics. I am a teacher over at Washburn University. Before I even worked at Kansas Policy Institute, which is my current employer, before that, I was chief economist over at the Kansas Department of Revenue. And my work focused on taxes and budgets and the economic implications of most government policy. I would have never dreamed that I would be looking into COVID, and not necessarily the biological components of COVID, because that's obviously not my skill set, but the effects government policy about public health policy can have on people. I never thought that that would fall into my lap, or if that had that type of role for me. I'm just following the plan, so to speak. So to get to your question, it wasn't necessarily my first time, you know, breaking into that type of role, that type of journalistic role. You know, that's something that I've been doing, you know, for most of my professional career, which is making news of certain data or statistics or trends, because I know for certain that if it's my job to, you know these things, I know the average Joe or Jane out there, you know, wouldn't even have a clue. So at first,
meaning that what you, if you're going to analyze something, you want to make sure other people understand it and can digest it, and it can be used.
Exactly that. And, you know, that actually flows into, you know, me teaching at Washburn. You know, my job is to take a textbook of information and make it relatable so that anyone can understand it. And when that does not happen, when there is either disinformation, misinformation, no information out there, then bad things can usually happen and power can be exerted over other people. So when it came to the COVID stuff, you know, one of the first things, I think one of the first notable things I did, or at least what I consider notable, would be letting the public know that a lockdown for the state of Kansas wasn't a good thing. I know in the throes of COVID-19, everyone was unsure. No one had a lot of information. There was a lot of fear out there. And with the lack of information that we had, maybe it was justified. But I know
it was a lack of information, that's what first jumped to me. It's like, how are we making such big decisions before we have had enough time to know information?
But anyway, go ahead. That's true. Oh, no, that's true. But I could also understand the other side of the coin, which people say, you know, I need some sort of security. I need to at least feel secure in this, so I at least do something. And I understand that at a certain point of view. But, you know, I was the first one that noted that, look, lockdowns are not the tool that we should be exercising here. If it really is successful, then it's the equivalent of taking a sledgehammer to crack a nut. You know, it would get the job done, but it would create so many other disastrous consequences. And now, 6 months later, you know, how many more Kansans, how many more Americans have come to the point that lockdowns should actually not have been done? And they were actually, not only did they have those unintended consequences, but they didn't even crack the nut, so to speak, according to that analogy. Yeah. So I would say that was my first foray in coming out publicly about, you know, what we should be doing in terms of this COVID stuff. And then, yeah, we can talk about the chart right now if you want to.
Well, so, I want to say something. So you're talking about closing down the economy, and a person like me, because I'm an accountant and I am in, that's what I deal with. And I said the exact same thing back in March when I was like, and it's on Chemology, where I said, you're going to destroy more people's lives than people that are going to die. So which life is more valuable? And I was attacked on Facebook about being this horrible human being, that I was putting money over these lives. And it pulled me back. Like, I just got off social media. But you're saying the exact same. I was like, why are we shutting everything down? We don't even know what's going on. And the suicide rate's going to go up, and the small businesses aren't going to survive. And we're pushing everybody to online, and we're doing all this stuff. And people were just out of their mind of like, no, we have to save grandma. I mean, that's all we heard for so long, was if you said anything like you just said, you know, the mass shutdown, how dare you? So how did you handle, like, you're talking about that? Did you get that kind of pushback? Like, what was the majority of pushback you got?
That was the same pushback I got. And my response to that was, look, if lockdowns, you know, were really a good tool to mitigate COVID-19, then at best, what you're going to be doing is trading one life for another.
Yep.
Right? You may be saving people from COVID-19, but then you're going to be dooming someone, you know, due to mental health, you know, effects of being locked in one's home, suicide rates, or hospitals weren't accepting any non-COVID procedures.
Right.
And so what if there was a complication, you know, dealt to delaying you getting certain types of work done.
Yep.
You know, you're trading in for that life. So at best, what you could hope for with a lockdown is trading one loss of life for another. And you would never get the utopian or ideal solution, which is saving both lives. But you would if you didn't do a lockdown and you focused on other targeted measures.
Right.
Right.
So you're saying, and a couple things. Yes, 7 months ago, we're saying the same thing. And I think a lot of people were. That's what was so baffling. People like you were. It's the full, I refer to it sometimes as the full equation, not one factor, the full equation, all of the aspects of it. And then also to your point, Michael, there were some studies out there that did try to and did end up coming to, as you know, some rough numbers, but basing all those various lives and years, you know, saved and costed, you know, with all these various aspects like healthcare being shut down. So yes, it made a lot of sense to a lot of us and other people. It was just like it wasn't supposed to matter. So that's let's right. talk about the first story that I was aware of with you, or maybe it may have been Kansas Mill Sentinel, and that's not the name. So you at some point became working with or with parallel to the Sentinel, and that's sentinelksmo.org. And I don't know how long ago that was, but that's when I first became aware that you were kind of saying the same things they were, or they were tracking along with you, or vice versa. So I want to give them props. Whenever I've done videos on my Facebook page, I've tried to give you both you guys good props on that. So excellent.
Let me say this quickly, and then you can get back to talking about the graph. So I work for the Kansas Policy Institute, mm-hmm. right, which is the parent company of the Sentinel. And like you noted, the Sentinel works to hold media accountable. So it works on publishing, you know, the same stories, but with the context that you're not getting,
right.
Or the data that you're not getting from, you know, most Kansas media outlets. It understands, of course, that, you know, no one media, no one journalist is going to have objective truth. But at the very least, we can at least, you know, the Sentinel understands that it can have, you know, an opinion, or not opinion, but present context and sometimes present an opinion that's on the other side of the aisle. And then it's up to, you know, you as the reader to read both sides of the issue and make a decision for yourself.
And I think that blends in well with the first one, and something that Kim and I were, sometimes we go ranty and almost sounds like we're arguing to each other just on the phone. And it's really just because we're both ranting.
We're very passionate.
We're both ranting. And right. It was about how do they not provide context? How do they not provide this full picture? How does Fauci in July, we'll get to that, say one thing and never inform the public of what he's saying, you know, not how it should really be informing a bunch of other stuff in the country. And he knows a fact, but he doesn't let it inform. So just around the idea of the full context, one of the first stories I was aware of was when Lee Norman used two different scales in the same graph. What he did is to make it seem as though at the time, this was during like a weekly press conference or something, that urban area COVID incidents slipped below rural area COVID incidents to allegedly make the point that mask wearing is winning. He had a really quotable, meaty quote in there he threw in there. And it was, we kind of asked that, whether that was the first big story you broke. Was that the first big COVID story that you felt that was that you broke regarding that?
I think it was the biggest.
Yeah. it ended up going in a lot of places, didn't it?
Oh yeah. We got and you know what, let's backtrack, you know, for your listeners, let's kind of tell that whole story there. So yeah, a press conference Dr. Norman had, it was about a month after Governor Kelly signed the mask mandate. And of course, counties were allowed to opt out of it. And so Dr. Norman said, you know, we have a natural experiment, which before I even get anything, if you live in Kansas, if you're a Kansan who's been here for the last 10 years, you should never call any public policy experiment. We just have bad luck with that. Sam Brownback, and now you're making this claim, Dr. Norman. But then again, he does live in Kansas City, Missouri.
Right.
So he made a chart that, you know, showed COVID cases over time since the mandate, and it was two lines. One was a mandate counties, and the other one were no mandate counties. And like you said, Tyson, his graph showed, or just any average Joe looking at it, it had mandate counties having fewer cases than no mandate counties. But of course, the reality was that wasn't true. And the reason he was able to create that graphical representation was because he used two different scales on his chart, where on one side, I can't remember what it was anymore, but let's say it was like 0 to 30. No. It didn't start at zero. They were like from 12 to 30, and then the other one was like 4 to 14. So right. It weren't an apples to apples comparison.
They never even matched. They never even overlapped. He had making it look like the urban incidents, if you will, the mask mandate, which is overwhelmingly the more rural county, urban counties, dipped well below the urban ones. In reality, they never even crossed at any point in the time period.
You're exactly right. Now, what I will say is this, that type of chart, you know, having two axes isn't unusual. What is unusual is, of course, having the different scales. So that,
right.
That 15 to 30 on the other side, the 4 to 14, that is unusual. But what I thought was somewhat egregious was that it's given to the public. And remember, at the start of our conversation here, we had an understanding that our role should be to take complicated information and make it relatable for people to understand. And I'm sure you can all agree that no average Joe or Jane out there is going to understand how to read a two-axis chart, even if it was scaled properly. And so I saw there was a unique opportunity there. Dr. Norman created a really confusing chart and just wanted you to trust what he was saying on the matter as being the absolute fact. And so, you know, all I wanted to do was take that same data and put it in a chart that everyone can easily read and understand and see if Dr. Norman's words still rang true. And unfortunately for him, it didn't. And so we got picked up by the Wall Street Journal. Britt Hume from Fox News retweeted our story. Washington Examiner picked it up. The Foundation for Economic Education picked it up.
Oh, one of my favorites.
I love Fee, yes. I said Wall Street Journal already. And then over the weekend, a lot of the local TV news broadcasts took it up as well. So WIBW in Topeka, KSNT, KAKE down in Wichita, I think KMBC as well. And then after all of that play at the national stage and even at the local TV news level, then finally Kansas print media decided to take it up. And it was only after House Majority Leader Dan Hawkins, you know, said he wasn't going to vote for Governor Kelly's initiatives because she had not addressed this issue. So only because he had brought it up did the Kansas print media, so that's CJ Online, that's Wichita Eagle, that's Kansas City Star, only then did they decide it was worth writing the story, even though it was already nationally and locally picked up.
Isn't that crazy? A real quick economic nerd, I just want to see if we, Foundation for Economic Education, a quick story they had that I loved it so much, pre-easy internet days, I had a little file of things I kept. It was a write-up called iPencil. Do you know about iPencil?
Oh, any free market supporter knows Reed's iPencil. That's right.
All right, good. So we had that one. And then I remember at the time, I don't remember how much I said it on the podcast, but I certainly pointed out, at least verbally and maybe to some other folks, it also seemed like the beginning point was odd, because the beginning point of this chart showed this quick drop. And then it leveled off immediately, or pretty close. It came a lot close to leveling off. The major drop in the urban incidence of COVID happened just within like the first data segment that he showed. So immediately I thought that was odd. And I thought, well, I'd be interested in the last 2 or 3 weeks because it seems like a pretty cherry-picked start date. Well, now tell us about the next big story you broke through, like a Kansas Open Records Act that was related.
Yes.
To that.
So, you know, we had a huge story with just putting the two different charts side by side. We wanted to say, well, you know what, why did he pick that date? Because he was making, because Dr. Norman was making the argument that mandate counties saw a larger decrease in COVID cases than no mandate counties. So we asked for the data. We finally got the data and we tried to recreate it. And we found that within 10 days after the mandate, after Governor Kelly signed the mandate, cases in mandate counties rose. And I think on the 10th or 11th day, it started dropping. And so that's when Dr. Norman decided to make his chart to prove his mandates were effective.
He literally picked the one date where it had a dramatic fall afterwards. And then right before, it had been going up. And he explained at the time, it's just, oh, well, we just pick a certain number of days out. Just wanted some time for it to settle. And he didn't show. Go ahead.
That's right. So he said, we asked him, why did you pick that date? Now that you see that you hid the fact that these cases were actually rising. And he said, well, we picked it because even though the mandate was signed on the 3rd, you have to give it an incubation period in order for the effects to come through. At face value, he is correct. But current research says the incubation period is 14 days, not 10, not 11. So he decided to pick a date, you know, that wasn't even consistent with the research that's out there. Which only creates more suspect that it's more likely than not he picked that date because he needed the data to look good, not because he was actually following the science. And then thirdly, I don't know if you want to get into this point, but have we looked at the same data 2-3 months from that point? Well, guess what? Mandate counties still have more cases than no mandate counties. In fact, I think part of the reason you haven't seen an update to this chart is one, because I think we showed them up on it, but two, the data still doesn't work in their favor.
Right, right. So now the third one that I wanted to talk about was this one that you broke. Now, the information in some fashion has been out there. There was a New York Times article some time ago, actually, that pointed towards this. Not Tyson's Conspiracy Corner. No.
It's a big corner.
The New York Times had a similar deal. So this always blows my mind when people act like we're just, you know, cherry picking out of just somebody. I mean, when I source data, it's like you. I don't source just any old stuff. I mean, to me, and this is another thing that I like the way you guys are doing things, you go find them, you know, coming from the horse's mouth, you know, because anybody can kind of fiddle around with things and kind of look. But when you find Fauci himself saying something, or you find KDHE saying something, you know, that's the important part. But so now we have something probably happened about 3 weeks ago. I'm not sure, but explain this. Okay, we've got 42 cycles. This is PCR testing. I know that I've explained it on this story, but right. Michael might explain it differently. We've got 36 cycles. We've got 42 cycles. We've got 40 cycles. Explain that situation.
Sure thing. So the gold standard of COVID testing is what's known as a PCR, a Peter Charlie Roger test. How it works is very much like a smoke detector. A smoke detector, of course, detects smoke particles and can start an alarm telling you that there's a fire, right? If it detects enough smoke particles. A PCR test works fundamentally the same way, except of course it's looking for COVID particles. So it'll look through your genetic material, trying to find COVID particles. And if it finds enough, it will sound an alarm that your body has COVID-19 particles within it. Now, how it finds COVID-19 particles and how it triggers its quote unquote alarm uses what's known as cycles. So think of it as a magnifying glass, right? Yep. If you're if you need to find evidence of something really small, in a particular area, you could use a regular magnifying glass. Maybe you'll find it. Maybe you don't. If you change out and get a more higher power. There we go. A higher power. Thank you. A higher power magnifying glass. You might find it. You might not. If you go down to a microscope, maybe you'll find what you're looking for. So that type of magnification is known as cycles. And the higher cycles it takes for a COVID-19 test to find particles, COVID-19 particles, the more sensitive it is, kind of like the higher power on a magnifying
And by definition, that it means that if you know how many it took to actually, if you will, see it using your analogy, how much magnification you needed, you know, you have a sense of how few there were to begin with.
That's right. So it goes back to the smoke detector. How many times has a smoke detector gone off because of someone's bad cooking, right? Or how many times has a smoke detector gone off because maybe you had too many candles going off at one time?
Right.
You know, just because it detects smoke particles doesn't necessarily mean it's a fire.
Kitchen is
on. That's right. And just like a PCR test, just because it detects COVID-19 particles doesn't mean that the person has a contagious, live, transmissible virus within them. And so what the research has uncovered was there seems to be a range of magnification of cycles a COVID test can go through that even though it may find COVID-19 materials, that virus isn't alive. And so that person isn't contagious.
It's like I'm trying to even think of what your analogy would be. Like if you needed to use an electron microscope, if you're using electron microscope when really you should have been able to see this amount with a magnifying glass, then you're being overly sensitive and you're finding something that really was an amount that wouldn't matter. Would that be the kind of the analogy there?
Yeah, that could work. Or you could say, you know, Tyson, if you wanted to find evidence that Kim was in the room there with you, you know, any gym off the street would say, well, just look around. Is she there? And then you would say, no, but I found a strand of her hair, right? Right.
Somewhere.
I found a strand of her hair. Does that mean she's in the room with you right now? No, but I found evidence she was there. Well, what question are we kind of trying to answer here? And that kind of brings us to the whole purpose of these COVID-19 tests. They were designed to measure, the prevalence of COVID-19 in the system. It wasn't designed to tell you, right, whether you are a contagious or infectious case. And so we have to look at these magnifications, these amplifications, these cycles, to get an idea of whether the virus inside you is really alive or not. And so the research has said, if it takes more than 34 cycles, 34 types of this magnification to find COVID-19, the odds are this virus isn't alive. The odds are, you're finding a strand of hair. You should not call it a person in the room. It's not an infectious case. FDA has said 40 is the recommendation, which is...
That's adding a humongous margin of error.
It is, which is beyond what the research recommends. And then Kansas has gone even beyond what the FDA recommends and has said 42 cycles is the standard.
Can we find the DNA from Kim to see whether she is in the room right now? Okay, right? I mean, that's kind of where we are. I know that it seems like an exaggeration for making the point, but in a way, these generations are an exponential curve, if I understand right. And so the difference between a certain number of cycles and up to six more cycles is a pretty big difference. It's not linear. Isn't that correct?
That's right. I think the New York Times said, by their estimate, roughly 90% of COVID cases should actually have been classified as a negative. And that was, and I'm trying to remember what the benchmark was. I think they were looking at 33 as the standard and maybe taking an average of what everybody else was doing, which would probably be around 40. But if that's the case, then, that tells you for the state of Kansas, you're looking at most likely around half, I'm just being on the safe side here, half of COVID cases, not contagious at all. And so the focus, and this brings us to the issue here. The issue is that state public health officials are assuming every case is an infectious, contagious one. Yes. And that's really the issue is, you know, we can talk about PCR tests, but what it ultimately comes down to is, do you interpret the results properly? And we're not.
So go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
Is whether we're interpreting the results of a COVID test properly or not. And, you know, the governor is coming out every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, effectively scolding scolding Kansans, right, for cases rising. And Kansans are left scratching their heads because, by and large, you know, we don't see the disastrous effects of COVID-19. By and large, we see more of us being quarantined at home than anything else.
Right.
And now the data has come out to show that for most of us, it's not even contagious.
Yeah, and to your point, I think your numbers are right, because I Kim can tell you, and when you do get totally brushed up on chemology, like, you know, I know you'll be spending your time now.
Exactly.
You'll find about our own little personal stories. And about the last month and a half, I've been really busy with buying a home. So, but because we knew we were going to have you on, I delved back into some data, and I looked at that French data, and it is astounding with more granularity. And you're right. I mean, basically, you go up to 42, and you have gotten about 100%, if you will, false positives, those that are not enough to do anything with, a full 100%. So just as many false positives as actual positives.
And I think it's funny that coincidences no longer exist either. So COVID has eliminated the flu, the just a stomach virus, and coincidence, because if someone gets it, they're just like, I got it from this person. I'm like, how do you know where you're getting it from? You went to Walmart and like, oh no, I got it from this person. And then this person gets tested, but I'm positive, but I don't have any symptoms, but then I have to be, it's to me, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
how before you never could figure out where you got,
you
the
just knew you're
flu.
Sick
you
that
just
day.
Got sick, and you did whine about it on Facebook. You're like, this is as sick as I've ever been in my entire life. That was like 2019 stuff. And now when we get sick, it's like this. I just thought I'd let you know we have COVID in the family. What? Oh my gosh. Well, we don't have any symptoms, but you guys, please pray for us.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's when you talk about the public policy overlap, I was thinking about this today, looking at this French data. It's okay for there to be extra sensitivity. Maybe this is the way I'm interpreting this. If they just simply told you the threshold that they caught you as positive with, and they said, yeah, we caught you at 36, which means there's either hardly anything there or you don't even really have it. So, but why don't you be careful in a couple days, see how you feel, and or we'll come in and we'll test you again in 3 days. Okay, well, you're a negative, or you're now a positive, but it only took 25 cycles. Do you have any symptoms? See that? That difference can mean something individually, but without the cycle threshold being a part of the understanding of just adding the numbers up, then these numbers are where the big mistake is of adding the extra sensitivity. You could argue that, well, I mean, I'd rather be safe than sorry. If I'm positive, but I'm asymptomatic, but you're overdoing it, it's still not a great idea if they're saying it's dead after 36. But, you know, worst case, you go, oh, okay, well, as long as they say, don't be worried, you're not sick, you might as well stay home, talk to us in a couple days, or we'll retest you then. That's one thing when it's just individuals. But when we add up all these numbers and that becomes the point to, like you said, scold every week, that's an entirely different scenario. Right?
Yeah, and you're exactly right. We can't even get to that point where there's an honest conversation happening between the physician or the lab and the patient, because the patient doesn't even know, right?
Yes.
We have the state government that is attempting to hoard, you know, that information, when it could mean, you know, it of course affects human behavior. And, you know, we just put out, the Sentinel just put out a story just today saying we have asked Lee Norman, why aren't you, you know, disclosing thresholds? Why aren't you disclosing the thresholds? What do you have to say about our findings about thresholds being out there? And what's your response to it? And Dr. Norman hasn't yet to respond.
You did that sometime last week, right? Early last week, because I sent, a similar email, and I carbon copied you guys, and your executive director answered back and said that you guys had asked him on Monday, I think.
Yeah.
It's been a full week.
So when the government is in business of keeping, you know, people in the dark, it's never going to go well. And I don't understand what's the issue of putting more information out there so that can, there can be more honest conversations so that we can better live our lives and make decisions for ourselves.
And to your point also then, when you go back to the July, we're going to talk about this, but no less than back in July, Dr. Fauci himself said the labs have that. They just don't share it as a matter of course. If you wanted to ask for it, you could get it. They do have it. They know how many cycles it took to cross the threshold. So the information is out there.
Yes, right.
But what I wanted to ask you real quick, when you found, this is only like a week and a half ago or so, when you found Dr. Fauci in July saying, and I quote, as soon as I find it, if it takes even 36 cycles to for the test to pass the threshold, when you found him saying that that is nothing more than dead nucleotides, what was your reaction when you found that? And were you the one who found the one that video from July?
Yeah, I did find it, and only because someone else had directed me to it. My thought process was, it's a good example of a scientist understanding what the data says, and then turning to the public and the media and having a completely different conversation, right? It's an understanding of, here are the facts of the matter, but here are the politics of the matter. And I found it very interesting that, you know, within like-minded individuals, he can have a conversation that speaks right to the vulnerabilities of COVID, the vulnerabilities of public policy. But, you know, when it comes to the public face, he has to speak in terms of absolutes. And right, obviously, when you do that, that means government policy has to be one size fits all. It can't be targeted. And then ultimately people suffer for it.
And yeah, it's like, what shouldn't it be?
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I give me 1 second?
Sure. So anyway,
what I was going to say,
explain too, that to me a little bit more. What Fauci, Fauci or whatever his name is.
Said. What Fauci said in July was that anything after 36 cycles, if it took 36 cycles to cross the threshold, it's basically nothing more than dead nucleotides.
But where did he say that?
He said that on a video with other professional virologists. It was literally something called like Virology Today or something like with two other professional virologists. And then to your point, Michael, what I thought was interesting is that if he's not the face of, I think I said it in the email, the resistance to this, then who is? How is it not his duty to connect these type of dots, you know, and say, hey guys, you know, in July I said anything past 36 is dead nucleotides, right? The FDA has it 40. I'm not sure why they're doing that. At least make that public. And some of you guys have it at 42, which doesn't make any sense. It seems to me he should have to connect those dots, or what's the point of him, you know, having that position? It's confusing to me.
Wish I had an answer for you. I have no idea. But, you know, in terms of the locus of control, we obviously, you know, us as Kansans have a bigger influence getting state government to act than the federal government. But, you know, even then it shows that trying to get state government to understand, look, maybe we should be doing something different. Maybe our messaging should be different. Maybe we should disclose this additional information. Even that can have its own obstacles to overcome.
Along that line, then, I am curious, because you guys have certainly used this to varying results, but how have your Freedom of Information in Kansas, called Kansas Open Records Acts, how those requests and that process gone for you?
It depends on the subject matter, honestly. When it has come to COVID, we have been ghosted, so to speak. Almost every request that we send out for COVID metrics, you know, gets read, but we don't get responded to. And it would be one thing if, you know, the response came back as, we don't collect this information, or we don't have this information. Right. I would at least consider that a step in the right direction. But we don't even get that type of discussion. We get no response whatsoever. And so we're left having to say, you know, we asked, as an example, Dr. Norman about, you know, COVID test sensitivity, and he has declined to comment after a week, and after repeated, you know, solicitations. And so what does that say? It unfortunately suggests that there's a political motive behind it, and they're hoping that by staying quiet, it gets swept under the rug.
Right.
Yeah, it's just insane. Now, what do you think? Kim and I were talking about this last night in our frustrated rant back and forth on the phone about those. What responsibility are they supposed to have to just an email that copies the allegedly right public information officer versus some specific Kansas Open Records Act, you know, filling out a form? Is it the same obligation? Is it different? Is that part of maybe the process of us trying to go forward and get more information from them?
Well, ultimately, in terms of the end result, which is transparency and being open to the public, that's the end goal. The fact that they haven't immediately disclosed this information, right, was particularly troubling, which is why we sent the open records request so that we could get that information. And then now that they're essentially stonewalling us on that, it ultimately doesn't, you know, it doesn't give a good sign for how transparent you want to be and whether you really want Kansans to trust that you have an idea of what you're doing to help mitigate COVID.
Well, so what you're saying then is, I'm sorry, keep your thought just for a moment. You start with an email, why not start low and see if they'll answer a less formal deal? And then if necessary, you'll go to open record.
Maybe that's how it started, but we just go straight to the open records now.
Okay.
So we just send that in. We don't even bother with that because that would just take longer. We have to, of course, cite the statute that obligates them to provide this information and provide a response in a timely manner. And they're not even following that.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say is you can send emails and they're getting thousands of emails from random people, both sides, to get a response to an email if they don't know who you are. I don't even expect that anymore. Like I send out emails and my news press releases and stuff and they don't know it. I have to send it to the big dogs. I used to try to send it to the right people, but now I just attach their boss to it so that their boss knows that they're not getting it. And the same thing with this stuff. What I really don't like is that we have been put into, and they'll tell you, I'm not in fear, but they have used fear to make us abide by their rules. And if they were to, because Americans, we're very stuck in our ways and we're very like, we're not going to do it. But all of a sudden they started that fear stuff. So they got us into, if you don't do this, you're going to kill other people. So now we're not worried about us. We're worried about them. But then to keep that fear going now with not being transparent, we're only left with assumptions, which only starts more with hatred and anger, and your fear kind of mutates now into things that we've never really dealt with. Like, I would never have thought in my years of living that I would be right now being told, you know, we have a potential of going to have to be back in your house for another month and you can't leave and you can't do that. I never would have fathomed that this would be something, but we have the fear, and it's like them not talking is making us now, we should even make up a new word for it, because I don't even know if there's a word out there for what we're feeling right now. Because I've never been fearful the entire time. Like, I'm like, what are you talking about? I have been stressed out and I have anxiety but I already have that. So that pushed my anxiety up. But there are people out there that are so in fear, but now so far into it, if there's another word for it, there's something else, because fear is not the right word, because they're like, it's kind of like a cult in my mind. They're just like, you yes. have to do this and you have to do this. It's like, it's on repeat.
At this point, if you're still believing right. that we still are somehow this 2.2 million that one of the early British guys brought up is going to happen after, you know, 11 months, then you're not operating out of logic anymore. That's
right.
For sure.
There's got to be, I mean, it's going to be a syndrome Like, eventually the doctors will, because of the PTSD with all of this, you know, be going back to normal, there are people going to be suffering from a new syndrome. I need to name it, and, you know, that's where I make my money, right there. Go. I got to go to school. And
so I know you wanted to go only an hour. We're down to 14 minutes. I got about 7 things left. So see if we can't get through at least some of them. Now, I remember early on, and I had videos out about this. We talked about it on our podcast. We talked about how early studies tried to do this, and it was try to figure out the antibodies, to figure out what the true spread was. Now, that has never happened. It seems like it politically, that's the reason. We can scare with current cases, but we never take the positive side of that, which is, well, how far spread is it? Because early on, it was herd immunity. Why do you think that the antibody testing never happened or is not being emphasized to figure out that herd immunity? Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, not really. I know, as I said, like the gold standard of PCR testing is the PCR test. Now, the downside to that test is that it takes, oh my goodness, days to get a result. Whether you're infected or not, which isn't really good at stopping COVID, because you can take a test and think that you're completely fine as long as you don't have symptoms. And, you know, maybe you sneeze one day and you could accidentally spread it and you wouldn't even know that you were contagious until the results came back. There are other types of tests out there known as antigen tests. The benefit to these tests is that they are 15 minutes. They're less intrusive than a PCR test, but they're not as sensitive. In fact, they have such a low sensitivity. They actually fall into the range of having more false negatives than having a false positive. But the benefit, as I said, is that it's 15 minutes. Now these tests are coming in to the state. President Trump has signed a contract out to deliver roughly 1 million of these tests to Kansas. They won't be here. They all won't be here though until next year. And what I think what should be done with those tests is something very similar to what the NFL is doing. When, you know, someone has symptoms in the NFL, they get a PCR test, that gold standard test. And if they come up positive, what the NFL then does is they give out the antigen test, the rapid 15-minute test, to everybody that's been in close contact with that one individual, right? Just to get a sense of how far it spread from that one positive case. If someone comes up positive, then then you start the process all over again. Give antigen test to another number of people that person has been in contact with. And for all those who are negative, they are asked to self isolate for like 2 to 3 days. That's really it. Not even a whole week. For about 2 to 3 days. Then they test those individuals again with the same antigen test. And if they come up with 2 negative tests over that 2 to 5 day time frame, they're clear to play. Not only that, but they also run their PCR test at a much lower threshold.
Yes.
As well. So twofold there. They decrease the sensitivity on their PCR test, and then they give out the antibody test not to stand as a de facto COVID test, but just to measure how far it's spread, just to see if anyone has developed antibodies to the infection yet. And then only by coming up negative twice on those tests do they clear you to play. Something like that we can institute here, in the state. It doesn't have to be.
And as long as you lower that threshold to a reasonable amount, it makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, you're just giving antigen tests to a bunch of people that probably don't need it.
Yeah, you don't want to. You don't want to do that. You want to get the best of both worlds. You want to ensure you have a positive test, and then you want to stop the spread as soon as possible using those antigen tests. Yeah. So places I think that could work would be, would be nursing homes, would be correctional facilities. And in fact, if you do those two, that's half of all COVID deaths right there.
Right.
Nursing homes and correctional facilities. If we do that, then we could hopefully put a really sizable dent in our death rate. I have no idea about cases. I honestly don't care about cases. Cases are rising so much that it doesn't make any correlation to hospitalizations and deaths anymore. It used to at a certain point, but now it's growing so widely. It has little predictive power.
Well,
so I'd rather
go ahead.
I know. I would rather focus on hospitalizations and deaths.
Oh, absolutely. Because that's cases. More like reality. Go ahead.
Yes.
Well, and so one of my jobs today, one of the texts was around someone who called this morning and said, I am positive for COVID. So he left work and went home because they had hung out this weekend together. Called around, called back and said, the earliest I can even get in to get a test because our hospital's already booked up is Wednesday. He couldn't even get a test till Wednesday. So this is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So then he has to wait. So he's going to miss an entire week of work if that's how the policy is. And he was like, do I have to miss the whole week? And well, like, when was he positive? Well, he found out he's positive today. Well, when did he get his test taken? Like, what? I don't understand all this, but you can't even go in and get a test right now unless you have the symptoms. And then evidently it's an appointment. Even the drive-through thing is an appointment now. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but this young man doesn't have enough money to take a whole week off and not get paid because he was around somebody and he has no symptoms. He's like, yeah. I don't feel bad. I was like, you work outside, just go to work. If you get sick, I don't understand.
Yeah, it's weird. So some of this stuff is research intensive. And is there anything that you wish you could analyze but haven't had time for that maybe crowdsourcing might help with?
That's a great question. I don't think that's I don't have any idea what that would be. I'm completely content with my journalistic type role when it comes to COVID, you know, finding what other people are saying that's out there, researching it for myself, and then putting a graphic or making some sort of presentation together so that the general public can understand.
Basically, I mean, contextualizing and reemphasize. That's what I think one of mine is to, like, even your stuff. You found great stuff, and then I go, you know what? I can make a video out of this and emphasize it, you know, and analyze it. And but you're doing that with, you know, further removed things. I think it's a great role. I just didn't know if there wasn't a crowdsourcing type of a data thing that might be out there. Is there anything else that you're kind of like you're suspect or you're on the trail of, like some stories where you put, you know what? I got to put a bookmark in that because I think there might be something to that. Is there anything like that? Around COVID?
That has stopped for now.
Okay.
The most recent one was looking into mask usage across the state. I had found New York Times had said statewide 90% of Kansans wear a mask at some frequency. Docking study from the Fort Hays State University says over 90% wear a mask in a place that is not their home. And I think that was important to get out because there's like a narrative out there, of course, that, you know, we're scolding you for a reason. You're not wearing your mask. Well, the surveys say otherwise, and you don't have any other information that say that people that they don't other than anecdotal and what you may hear people griping,
right? The anecdotal scolding every week, right?
Now, yes. And one more thing I'll say, and it's not going to answer your question, but I think it's also really important to get out, is, you know, the other side wants to make this about masks. They want to make this about you don't like masks or you don't like saving people, right? And I think it's really important for, you know, like-minded folks like ourselves to understand that it's not about the mask in and of itself. If you want to wear a mask, you're by all means, you're welcome to do so. I won't shame you to wear a mask. I won't shame you if you don't. If you feel like, you know, you are doing a service by wearing a mask, if you feel like asking me to wear a mask would help you out, you are most certainly welcome to do so. I will not shame you just for asking a question if that makes you feel comfortable. But what I have an issue of is when it's mandated. Right. Good ideas generally don't require force.
Right.
Right. And if it really was, you know, a good idea, you shouldn't have to mandate it. And lo and behold, many people are masking anyway without you having to tell them so. And we're still seeing these results, which kind of shows, you know, that it's really not about
something else going on, data or the mask aren't as effective. Something else is going on. It doesn't make
exactly sense. Exactly. Something else is going on. And it's more likely than not politicians want the glory of saying, I did X and now it's working. You know, vote for me or, you know, let me raise your taxes.
So I know we only have a few minutes. One thing I'd like to ask you, I'm going to ask you both, and you can just kind of decide which one to answer how. One is, how do you keep yourself motivated knowing there's news gatherers out there who don't seem to specifically want to cover this stuff? How do you keep yourself motivated? And then also then, what do you think is a good best next step for we, the public, that want this to get better and get back to regular American freedom?
I can answer the second one first because it's the easiest. If you find my information out there important, needing to be out there, then you got to use it, and you have to use it to hold your electeds accountable. You may not be able to get your governor to make a move, but you can most certainly get your county commissioner or your city commissioner or your state house elected or your state senate elected. If you present them this information, and do it on a consistent basis, and it's enough of you, then you can get the needed change. If we look at this last election, State Senator Anthony Hensley, who's been in the Kansas State House since the first Star Wars movie, right, was just beaten by a gentleman by the name of Rick Close, and he was asked why he thinks he lost. And he says he thinks what did him in was the fact that too many Kansans, or that Kansans by and large, were upset that so many restrictions were placed on them to fight COVID.
Great.
Right. So there is your mechanism right there. If you feel this is important, share the knowledge, spread the knowledge, of course, talk amongst like-minded people, and then, hold your electeds accountable. And if they're not, if they don't want to listen and you think this is important, then you are by and well within your means to vote that person out, or if they do agree, you can, of course, work with them to find a policy that you want to change. And then to get to your first question, how do you get past the media? You have to start building your own audience. That's really it. When it came out, when the mass chart came out, and we had the story out, no one wanted to pick it up. No one in Kansas wanted to pick it up. Right. We had to, use our contacts to see if anybody on the national stage wanted to pick it up. And they were like, yeah, this is gold. This shouldn't have happened at all. I had spoken with Kim Borchers on a video just like this. And by people watching the video and agreeing that it was egregious, enough people contacted the local TV stations and we got picked up there. And that got the whole ball rolling. So I think the best thing for us to do is to keep growing that message, and eventually they wouldn't be able to ignore us.
Thank you. Now, other non-COVID watchdog items you want to discuss very quickly, anything going on that you want to point people to? Or?
Yes. One of the things we're working on now is the budget. I know the governor would love to think that her recent budget troubles are tied to COVID. That is not true. It is tied to, years of fiscal mismanagement. There are other states out there that are also dealing with COVID but have budget surpluses. Why isn't Kansas one of them, So what we want to do is we want to create an alternative budget by the time the governor comes out with her proposed budget in January. We want to say, look, if you want to do tax cuts, if you want to do property tax reform, if you want to do all these other things and make it structurally balanced, this is the budget that you need to pick, not the governor's budget. And our hope is that by doing that, we can get more, we can return more resources back to the people, grow the economy, and keep the government out of our hair.
Well, outstanding. Now, lastly then, Michael, if you could just discuss your official position, the group you work with, and how people can get in touch and or get involved or help.
Sure thing. So my role at the Kansas Policy Institute is called the Director for the Center for Entrepreneurial Government. Basically, all I work to do is find ways for government to create better services at a better price, which usually means taxes, to the people. You can, of course, find me on Facebook or Twitter at KS Tax Economist. And then I'm also on Parler at the same handle, KS Tax Economist.
Okay. Well, I know we're right in an hour. Kim, did you want to say anything real briefly?
Or? No, I appreciate you coming on because there's a few different people out there that I've been following the whole time. And in March, when this all came out, I was like, masks, why are they making masks like to mandatory? And I had all these different questions, and I'm like, they don't work. And we did the research, and then that research disappeared off of websites. It was really weird because we went to go back and I went to look and I'm like, it's gone. So I, you know, it's, you've got to have a lot of people out there that are truly just trying to get the real information out there, that don't have anything to gain a political career or whatever it is. I'm a little nervous about seeing where we're going to go. I have tons of people that I know have COVID right now. They've been sick for about a week and they've all just said it was like the flu. And so I think right now in, you know, my circle, because I think we kept people inside too long. All we did was just prolonged it to come out now. And it didn't go away in the summer, like they said, because we still had people inside, low immunity and all that kind of stuff. And I appreciate you coming on the show and, you know, giving our listeners, you know, one more person as opposed to Tyson and I, who we, you know, when this first came out, I told him in April, I don't want chemology to be COVID. So it has been very hard for the last 9 months to come up with topics that weren't downers and depressing and all that kind of stuff. So when we talk about COVID, we want to make sure that we're giving our listeners real information, not just our conspiracy theories. We talk about those off air.
You talk about them off the air. I talk about them all the time.
Yes, that is true. But anyway, yeah, I just want to say thank you, because I've enjoyed watching your videos and your stuff and all your research, and it's appreciated. I just wish that we had a way to show people what was real versus that they're bombarded with so much information that I think people just look for what's going to follow their thought. And that's what they go down that hole. They're like, oh, I like wearing my mask. The masks are good. And then I'm only going to listen to the person that tells me to wear a mask because this person over here doesn't believe in it. So they're not right. And I just don't, like you said, not everybody can understand what is going on. It needs to be put into, and I have to tell him all the time, can you make that for me to understand? Because he'll talk and then I'm like, I got nothing out of that. He's like, what do you mean? And then I'll say, like, nope, still nothing. And so then he's got to kind of bring it down a level or five. And so I really appreciated that. And I wish you a lot of luck.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. We appreciate everything you've done so far. I've become a big fan of yours. I'm going to try to continue that kind of symbiotic relationship of emphasizing your stuff and vice versa. So, again, appreciate it. Best of luck. You have a radio appearance tonight as well, correct?
That was yesterday. That was Sunday night.
So that's on the way. When is that? And it already aired? It was live?
It was actually already aired. I think I'll post it sometime tomorrow.
Great. And that was at a Wichita station, was it?
Yes, John Whitmer show.
Great.
Nice. Very
conservative.
Great. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
for appearing. You're my first guest on this show, so
I
appreciate
it. Your second idea for the show. We only have 90, but you're number two. So woo!
All right.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
So that was awesome. We're still recording. Let's end the show.
Oh, we're recording.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, we don't just end the show.
Yes, it was awesome. I mean, he said what I expected. You know, I mean, he's obviously a very professional guy.
Yes.
I did not know about his background. Like I said, you give me ideas and you share ideas with me, the ideas are what impress me, not your background.
Right.
I didn't know Michael from Adam.
No.
And even after I heard about his ideas enough to know that I was impressed by them, I still didn't know that, you know, he taught at a university.
I didn't know. I just liked the way that he did his stories, very professional, and they actually made sense. Yep. Like it was, it made sense. It was using real data. And so I didn't know that he was in economics. I had really no clue of
It made sense that he might have something that like, because of his approach here, a lot of this stuff is you can cross train or, you know, the skills overlap, like your accounting skills and my just general math and analytics skills and his, analyzing due to, you know, economy is a lot about a big, broad approach to, you know, how things might work on a large scale, how small decisions can affect the overall, you know, climate and country. So it makes sense with his background. As impressive as I thought he would be, I don't know if I think we covered basically everything I meant to cover. Was there anything there that surprised you or?
No, because I mean, we've kind of gone over most of it. It was nice to, as I was talking on 2 weeks ago, I mean, not 2 weeks ago, tomorrow's episode that by the time, you know, it'll be 58 or whatever, how you have a story and you really would want the actual person that's part of that story to be on the show. So you're not just talking about a person and you are interpreting what it is because you can lose a lot of information and a lot of stuff. And so I commend you on reaching out and setting this up because this was awesome.
Well, you know, the thing is for me, I've always thought that given enough time, I could take anybody's information and analyze it myself.
Yeah.
But to your point, it adds a certain amount of credibility to get closer to it.
Right.
And it not be just those podcast guys.
Right. It's just like two people talking about another person. You've got that person. Like
I do try to do that thing where I cite specifically and say,
right,
Dr. Fauci in July. However, it never hurts to say, hey, the guy from the Kansas Policy Institute.
Right.
You know, so, I hope to have more like this. And honestly, this is kind of the my first audition of talking to good experts and having good conversations, because you know George Norrie's getting up there in age and someone's going to need to take over Coast to Coast AM and that is not a young man's game. I mean, you can be you can be that guy until you're 72 or something, so
right
you know, I need to maybe start building up that resume and not just talking to you, even though we do a great job, but also, you know, maybe bringing some
but
people
I'm
in
like the biggest superstar in the whole flipping world.
Well, that's
what
I said.
And
I do a great.
Before we know it, everyone's going to know me, and then your phone's not going to stop ringing.
Yeah, there's always that. There's always that. So at some point, that will backfill and go, he podcast co-hosted with her. In that case, obviously George Norrie. In fact, we should get George Norrie out of here
early.
Now that you said that.
I thought it was great. Did you learn anything different? Like, was there something in there that you had
he definitely said a few new things. Now I had seen in me trying to kind of rebrief myself before this appearance, I'd saved a bunch of articles, but I hadn't gotten all the way through them. And I'd seen something along the lines of we should be taking the approach like the NFL, but I hadn't read it yet.
Right.
And I figured at least part of that was you haven't seen games just being totally shut down. You've seen some of them, but that they probably had that lower threshold level. But I had not heard the threshold and then antigen thing. But the antigen really is like a quick turnaround. I believe it's an antibody test.
Well,
but it's not as sensitive, but it still gives you some data. So that pairing was new to me. I did not know about the idea of, you've got the more sensitive deal for who might have it, and then take these others that's a little bit less sensitive, but if they don't have any symptoms and they're negative, then just go chill out by yourself. I didn't know that they were pairing that. That makes sense, because if you're going to have a working situation going forward, which we should just really stop in its track, because it's all when you see the French data that I'm going to analyze, you're going to see the negatives are overwhelming after about 34 cycles.
Right.
I mean, the negatives, what the French data is doing is saying, as I've delved into it, is say at a certain cycle threshold of these things that were called positive per the test, how many actually had live culture? And then they're comparing, you get at one point, it's only at about 34. I'll have to relook at it, but I was looking at today. Only about 34 is it and lower. Actually, I think it's even lower than that. is it that there's definitely many more positives than negatives.
Right.
After that, it gets crazy. The negatives overwhelm the positives.
Right.
So to add each cycle, that's why I said individually, it's okay if you have an overly sensitive one and you go, oh, you're not feeling bad. Well, it says you're positive, but why don't you just chill out, you know, be careful for the next couple of days. Tell us how you're feeling. Come back if you want. We'll give you another one. Okay, well, now we got a negative. Or each time it took 36 cycles.
Right.
You know, that's one thing. But when you add up the numbers of all these false positives, you'll see I'm gonna do the data you just shouldn't use those total numbers because those total numbers have way too much error rate in them.
Hmm.
It's like 100%. So, I like the appearance. I knew I would. He comes across very professionally. You can tell his intellect is high and he's focused and knows that as someone with a high intellect, he also knows as you heard him say, one of my lessons is what have I done sometimes? It's like, I know I could talk about this for 30 minutes and delve into the details, but every once in a while, remember, make a three minute video. And so you see, what did he say? He said, well, what I know that the stuff that I look into, Tom, Dick, and Harry are not going to just know. So right. Part of my job has always been kind of semi-journalist, what have I analyzed even as an economist?
Right.
And how do I make that more accessible and have the public be aware of it? If I think that this is the right thing to do because of information I found, this is going to be what's positive going forward, I have to let other people know. I can't just keep it in my brain.
Well,
and so he has to be that person who translates that
right.
to what normal people will take in. I should say normal people, non-experts.
Well, and as we were discussing last night, that's kind of what I was saying is depending on what kind of data you send out to these people, if you talk over top of their head to where they look at it and it's just a nerd putting a bunch of stuff on the words on a page,
yeah.
You have to know who your audience is, and that's who you have to write for.
Yeah.
That's honestly. So if you were writing for, you know, WebMD.
Virologists.
Right. Versus you were talking to a doctor. WebMD is talking to normal people who are reading the website, WebMD. But the doctors, if you go to the clinic and you're talking about the same thing, you're going to use their terminology that I'm never going to be able to understand. So that's why when you write stuff like this, and that's good, he took a graph that Dr. Norman intentionally in my brain, Kimology.
There's no doubt.
That he wanted fellow Kansans to go, well, looky there.
It dropped immediately.
Those
now they got less.
Dropped. And thinking that everybody is just so in their fear and so in their overwhelmed with data and social media that nobody was going to take the time. I mean, how intelligent does he think Kansans are? We're freaking intelligent. Not me, would not have done that. But if you would have saw that, even if it hadn't been done and you would have saw that, you would have started tearing it apart on your own. I mean, it would have taken you longer because you would have had to have done it, but you still tore it apart on your own. Even though he had done it, you did it on your own. So you can make sure that his information was correct because that's
what you do. Well, and emphasize in a way to do it, but you know, it's very obvious that if you pick a certain peak date and all of a sudden the first date that you have,
right.
That's not how any of this works. That's not how any of it works. It's a three to, you know, even he said 14.
Even on a roller coaster, you start out slow.
Yeah, it should drop and then immediately level off. You're doing something funky. Level off for a while immediately. And then with more information, it was actually that, no, that was the peak, probably statistical anomaly day. And before that, it was actually on the rise the whole time.
Yeah.
After the mandate, it was on the rise. Yeah. So no, it was great, and I'm pleased too that you allowed me to go ahead and simulcast it.
I loved it.
I'm gonna probably go ahead and produce it up to Scales of Truth and just kind of on my timeline. You can do it as the excursion on your time.
I'm doing excursion.
So. All right. All right. That's all I got.
Well, you guys.
Oh, wait a second.
Whoa,
just
what?
So you know. I'm seeing Kim for the only full calendar day that she's a fancy world traveler is back in little old Top City tomorrow. Off she goes again. And
yep.
So what?
I'm heading off till Dallas till the 18th.
To the 18th.
To the 18th.
8 days.
Yeah, man. And I mean, well, this is a podcast, but I went ahead and did my hair and put makeup on and everything for this podcast. I might take a picture just to put in here under the podcast.
I put on a button up shirt.
You did. And I have a really cute shirt on, but I do have shorts on. I have my athletic shorts on.
Yeah, it's totally like the old broadcast thing.
Yep. I had a t-shirt on. I'm like, I better throw a nicer shirt on only for him to see, because this is just, you guys can't see it. But...
Oh, okay. You meant, gotcha.
I meant you, because I love to dress up. I've always dressed up real nice every week.
All the time.
For the podcast. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining in for this excursion. It was great. And make sure to go to sentinelksmo.org and check that out. And he gave you how to get a hold of him on Parler, and what was the other one?
Parler, Twitter, and Facebook. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah.
Michael Austin MA is how you'll see him listed for, I don't know, Master of Arts or whatever that would be. I don't know.
We should have asked him, right?
Point is, he's got initials afterwards, and that's the guy you'll
that's
find.
That's the guy you'll find. All right. Well, so everybody, thank you so much. And as I am going to do tomorrow, keep taking all of your adventures.
Thanks for listening to this Scales of Truth and Chemology 411 simulcast. Be safe, everybody. You've been listening to the Scales of Truth with Tyson Harley.